25 minutes before the top of the hour, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by my good friend, Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us in studio via text message. Send your texts to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And of course, our website, that's got the latest Winnipeg Jets news. We got Winnipeg Jets audio. Anything Winnipeg Jets related, you can find it at IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, Stephen Wino. Stephen covers the NHL for the Associated Press. Stephen, good morning, and thanks very much for doing this.
Good morning, happy to. How are you guys doing?
Doing very well, Stephen. How about yourself?
Doing all right.
That's good. Glad to hear it. Excited for the hockey season to get underway?
Oh, man, it's a blast. We spent a few days in New York talking to a bunch of players and George Karros this week, and it's fine. It's starting to get cool here on the East Coast, and it's feeling like hockey weather again.
Yeah, you mentioned you were in New York for the sort of the NHL media days. Players in the NHL are so sort of robots to some degree when they give their commentary. In a situation like the one you were in, where you know you get this one-on-one opportunity, the season hasn't started yet, there's no real pressure, it's just more of a casual setting. How was it to sort of see players maybe a little more relaxed, a little unguarded, or did you find that they sort of had the same sort of robot personalities that we see so often during the course of the season?
It was more relaxed. You tend to get a lot more out of this because it's one-on-one, and I'm trying to ask questions that are a little more offbeat about summer stuff, about not necessarily the same questions that everyone else is going to ask, because the media days are kind of like a car wash. Guys go from room to room to room, and a lot of the questions are the same. But, I mean, these guys do have personalities. I mean, there are certain topics that guys feel more strongly about than others, whether it's the Olympics or goalie pads or rule changes and things like that, that if you know guys' personalities and you kind of have a good idea of what they're passionate about and what they care about, then you get more out of it than the standard cliche answers that we tend to get at morning skates and games during the season.
Stephen, the Canucks signed Bo Horvat yesterday to a 6-year, $33 million deal. It's got an average annual value of $5.5 million. What did you think of that contract, and what do you think about what the Canucks have done this offseason? Many people were surprised by the signing of Thomas Vanek, even though that could end up just being a trade chip come February.
The Canucks offseason confuses me because I'm not quite sure what the direction of the franchise is. Whether it's a youth movement with the Bo Horvats and the Brock Bessers and Jacob Markstrom and those kind of guys, or whether this team is trying to contend for a playoff spot, and it feels like they're stuck in between that. I think the Bo Horvat deal is a good contract in that you're paying for what you think he's going to turn into in the next few years. It's not as much what he's proven so far in a very small sample size, but what they think he's going to wind up being. And it's the trend for a lot of these guys coming out of their entry-level deals to get paid right away, to get paid for what those prime years should be. We've seen it with Connor McDavid. We're going to see it with Jack Eichel. The guys in their early 20s are getting paid like this. Shane Gostisbehere in Philadelphia just got that contract coming out of his entry level. But I think that's a good deal. I don't know about bringing in Michael Delzato, Sam Gagne, Thomas Vanek. Those moves seem to be that of a team trying to make the playoffs. And given how tough the West is to make the playoffs anyway, I don't know that the Canucks are even going to be close enough to think about that. And you're right. Maybe Vanek and Sam Gagne become valuable trade chips come January and February.
Stephen Wino is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stephen covers the NHL for the Associated Press. Stephen, one of the big, celebratory moments of your time in New York was the NHL and really the hockey world in general introducing this Declaration of Principles. Is it just me, or is this sort of a little bit of a bizarre concept for the NHL to be trumpeting so far and wide? I really don't understand, you know, what about it is so revolutionary.
It's more that you're putting stuff into black and white that is kind of generally understood about what people think sports should be. And it's certainly unconventional at the very least, because leagues don't come out and do this very often. I talked to a couple experts who are professors around, and they said the transparency in this is good for marketers, for sponsors, and could have a positive effect on parents, because you can point to this as the ideal. You can point to this as this is what the sport is supposed to be for. Now, on the flip side of that, if the NHL messes something up, if there's a situation like Andrew Shaw or Ryan Getzlaff, and the NHL doesn't live up to the principles it's set in this, it's going to look worse because they've come out and spelled it out like this. But it does follow the trend of the hockey is for everyone, the dealings with You Can Play, that it's a lot of trying to say, look, other sports might not be comfortable with this stuff. We are comfortable with it. And when you've got a country like the United States where kids are playing soccer way more, basketball way more, baseball, and even football, there needs to be more of the outreach to say hockey really isn't as expensive as everyone thinks it is, and there's reason to let your kids play it even if they're not going to play it in college or high school or make it to the pros.
Stephen, what are your personal thoughts on raising the NHL draft age to 19 years old? Because I know that some general managers, including Lou Lamoriello, have been in favor of this for years.
Yeah, Matthew Schneider actually came out in favor of this the other day, which as a Players Association person surprised me. It seems like I'm split on it because we've seen the NBA do it where now instead of coming right out of high school, you have to play at least 1 year in college or professionally overseas before you're eligible. The NFL has a higher age. You know, you've got to play 3 seasons out of high school to be able to be eligible now, or to be 3 seasons out of high school. That there's a reason that maybe for physical maturity it makes sense. But even now, like, I don't know that it'll have a gigantic effect on the path of players, because so few 18, 19-year-olds make it to the league anyway, that it really is just, it's an artificial movement to get guys maybe more ready to play in the AHL by age 20, or maybe move the AHL age down to 19. I don't know how big of an effect it'll have. It'll have a more substantial effect on the star players, the McDavids, the Tavareses, the Sidney Crosby, the Austin Matthews, those Patrick Laine, those kind of guys who at 18 in theory would be ready. And I don't know how you go about phasing it in, because if you raise the draft age, you're going to have 1 year where you might as well not have a draft, or you're going to have to phase it in by 6 months just to allow a more shallow pool for the draft once you do it.
Stephen Wino, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stephen's with the Associated Press. Stephen, you're based out of Washington, and of course, Washington means Alex Ovechkin. An interesting start to the season for the Capitals. You have Barry Trotz, who's in the last year of his contract. You have a yet another playoff disappointment for the Capitals last season after a fantastic regular season. Is this a different Washington Capitals organization this year? Is there maybe more pressure on them for some reason this year than in previous years, given that Ovechkin's a year older, you know, Trotz the last year of the contract? Is this a key season for the Capitals?
No, I think the pressure was all last year, and it's almost like the air's come out of the balloon a little bit, in that everyone was gearing up for a Stanley Cup, and all these guys were free agents last year. Justin Williams, Carl Alsner had to trade Marcus Johansson because you knew there was a salary cap crunch coming. That it doesn't feel like there's a lot of pressure on this team. It's just now the bizarre question of not is this a cup contender, but is this still a playoff team? And you still have high-end talent, Nick Backstrom, Kuznetsov, obviously Ovechkin, TJ Oshie, still have guys like Matt Niskanen and Braden Holtby who can probably get this team to the playoffs, but it doesn't look like a shoe-in anymore that this is definitely a playoff team. And look, if they get in and Braden Holtby gets hot, this is still a cup-contending team. But I think pressure has kind of been relieved, and now it's more of uncertainty about how good this team's going to be this season.
Stephen, there's less than a week to go before the start of training camp, and Boston Bruins forward David Pastrnak is still unsigned. Do you see David Pastrnak starting the training camp and regular season without a contract, or do you think this is going to get done here in the next week?
I think it'll get done by the start of the regular season for sure. I don't know how much of an emphasis it is to definitely get it done by early in training camp. These guys will get 4 preseason games total. I don't know that there's a huge loss there if he's not there by the start of camp, but I have to imagine something's going to get done. I mean, our RFAs, the way the system is right now, don't have a whole lot of leverage. It's not like he's going to get an offer sheet at this period of time. He didn't go to arbitration, didn't have arbitration rights to be able to do that. So as we saw with Sam Bennett getting done a few days ago, it's going to get done at some point. But the later it gets done, the more likely it is to be one of those bridge deals that's 2 or 3 years.
Stephen Wino, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stephen, we've seen players fail to come to terms on a contract until after the season starts, but it's been a long time since we've seen a player with a valid contract refuse to report to a team. Rumors abound that Matt Duchene, subject of trade rumors for now so many years at this point, believe it or not, years, you know, might not report to Colorado Avalanche training camp. Do you expect him to be in Denver when training camp starts, or do you think he's got a viable case for, you know, working out on his own in the meantime, you know, back at home in Toronto?
Well, I know his camp is upset about the way Joe Sakic and the Avalanche have handled this, but no, he doesn't really have a viable case not to be there because he is under contract. And you're right, this is so rare in hockey now. We used to see it back before the salary cap, when guys would be essentially holdouts, but like NFL players, and not show up at camp. That's happened so rarely in hockey that I do think Matt Duchene will be there. It probably makes sense for Papasan and Duchene to make it known that they're not happy. But Matt Duchene can do that by coming to camp and saying to everyone, I'm not happy, and kind of going about his business while still letting management know that he'd like to be traded or like to have some solution, or whether it being traded or staying. And knowing that he's going to play out the season, or at least play out to the trade deadline with Colorado. But it will be very hard to see, and probably not good for Matt Duchene in his camp if he doesn't show up to camp next week.
Stephen, you mentioned George Parros earlier, and you know the hiring of George Parros by the NHL's Department of Player Safety, I would say, was a little bit controversial. A lot of players were saying that, you know, why should an enforcer, you know, lead the NHL Department of Player Safety? And George Parros even mentioned, and I'm sure you saw the quote from George Parros, he said that, well, I was never even suspended, even though I was a guy that wasn't afraid to drop the gloves. I guess the question I have for you is, do you think he is the right guy for this job?
I do, and we sat down with George on Thursday in New York, and that's what he said, even saying he only got one call ever from Brendan Shanahan when he was a player about a play where kind of his shoulder hit a guy's head, and there was clearly no intent that George Parros was a goon in that he would fight, but not that he would be a dirty player. And what makes him good for this job, not necessarily is that, but he's a Princeton-educated guy who has paid attention to a lot of things about the league while he was in it. Like, he knows what he's doing. He doesn't mind getting the calls from players or GMs or agents about why did you do this, why did you do that. He took punches for a living for a decade, and more than that when he was playing, getting ready for the NHL. I do think it's the right call, especially and particularly if he's able to hire, and this is what he wants to do, a skilled player, ideally a Hall of Famer, a guy who had a long career as an offensive player, to be able to pitch in with that way of thinking, what it's like for a skilled player to go through things like that. Because we've seen Chris Pronger in this department as a dirty player. Brendan Shanahan is a dirty player. But we've also seen guys like Brian Leetch go through. And there is a benefit in having multiple viewpoints there. George Parros is a smart guy. He's been in this department for a year, working under Stefan Quintal, and Quintal is going to stay on helping him. It's a smart move to hire a smart guy in a job like that.
Stephen, I'm sure you've heard this name thrown out there before, but do you think Paul Kariya, I'm not sure that if he's interested, but do you think Kariya would be a guy that would be really well-suited for that role?
He'd be an interesting one. I don't get the sense from Paul Kariya. I spoke with him when he got elected to the Hall of Fame a couple months ago, that he is all that interested in getting involved in hockey again. And I know he kind of likes his life outside of hockey, and surfing and all that, that he doesn't seem like he's a guy who's eager to get back into it. Timu Solani has been trying to convince him to stay in the game and to do something, whether it's with the league or with the Ducks, that some guys are happy kind of moving on from their careers. Someone like that would make a lot of sense. Someone who has had a strong career and has gotten some illegal hits and has seen kind of the trend of what's acceptable and not acceptable in the game. I even think a guy like Eric Lindros would be terrific in something like this. A guy who had his career cut short by concussions, understands that, and is now kind of wading his toe back in the water of getting back in good graces with the Philadelphia Flyers organization, going into the Hall of Fame a year ago. That someone like that who was an offensive player offers a different perspective in a job like that.
Stephen Wino covers the NHL for the Associated Press. Stephen, always appreciate your time. Thanks very much for joining us this morning.
No problem. Talk to you soon.
Take care, Stephen. Thanks very much. When we come back, we are going to discuss that declaration of principles contract that the NHL introduced, that, and we discuss the idea of raising the draft age to 19. That's up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
We've been meeting for about 3 years, a lot of leaders from different organizations in hockey, and seeing if there's an opportunity for us to work together to be better, to make things better. And I don't think that's really ever happened to this level or this kind of a scale. The interesting thing about meeting together, we were looking at structure, we were looking at age-appropriate development, we were looking at how we can work together, and a common theme was, you know, how can we support and help build the culture in our sport, make it better.
That in reference to the NHL's Declaration of Principles. It's not really the NHL's, it's the World of Hockey's Declaration of Principles, a document that was trumpeted far and wide earlier this week in New York as 17 hockey organizations established a, quote, internal compass to help guide decisions about the sport. I'm not going to get into the particulars of the document. I mean, it basically is what you would logically think. They're basically putting on paper what you would think about sports and youth sports, and it's basically don't be a jackass.
Yeah, and Pat LaFontaine has been the driving force behind this.
Yeah.
La 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 Fontaine. Yeah, just felt like doing that
there.
Yeah,
please never do that again. I mean, and the, you know, the document was, you know, it got praise from Pope Francis, who I would sort of hope would have better things to worry about than this, but, you know, what do I know about?
Well, no, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show also got praise from
Pope Francis. Oh, the Pope is a big
Francis.
Fan.
Yeah.
A big fan,
I don't know,
of the Vatican.
I think you were off when he gave us that
praise.
Yeah,
I missed that. So the Pope is a big fan of the show. But anyways, the NHL unveiled this lengthy declaration of principles alongside the CHL and the NCAA and European leagues and the NHLPA. The big takeaway out of it is that the NHL is very interested in establishing or raising the NHL draft age to 19 years old. And this is something that, for the life of me, I can't understand what the urgency to do that is.
Well, and it's the idea, Drew, I should say, has been around for a while.
Yeah, Pat LaFontaine.
Yep.
Don't do your la-la-la-la thing. But he's the driving force as well behind the raising of the entry draft age, the raising of the draft age to 19 from 18.
Right.
And I just don't, for the life of me, see what the need is for that.
Yeah, and we just asked Stephen Wino about that, and his answer included, you know, the idea that this might not really matter that much. It might not change anything. And I guess the idea is that by allowing the age to increase to 19 years old, you're letting players develop not only skills wise but physically develop, right? I don't know. I agree with Steven. I don't know how much of an impact this would have. Lou Lamoriello is another guy that I mentioned to Steven. Of course, the Leafs general manager, longtime Devils general manager. He's been in favor of this, and, you know, they would give you obviously some more in-depth answers as far as why the draft age should be increased. But I know for a fact that junior teams would love it, because that means that you don't have to worry about your players being drafted until 19. And probably U.S. colleges would like it as well, Drew, right? Because
sure,
that means that if you have, you know, a player, you know, whoever that may be, you
but
know.
How many 18-year-olds are playing in the NHL? Only the exceptional of the exceptional.
Not a lot.
Right. So this is, to me, much ado about nothing. So are you going to tell a guy like Connor McDavid that he has to wait till he's 19 to play in the NHL? I mean, Connor McDavid was, you know, most of the first overall picks lately have been clearly ready to play, you know, Patrick Laine, Austin Matthews. Are you telling those guys they have to wait an extra year? Why? They were clearly NHL ready. And if they're not NHL ready, it's not like in the NBA where there was no farm team and there was no farm system like there was before they raised their age. Those guys could go spend, you know, in the NHL case, they can go spend another year in junior if they're not ready to make the NHL. They can go spend another year, you know, wherever it might be, you know, overseas. I just don't see what the pressing need is. Like, what's the driving force behind this?
I guess the argument has also been that you're putting undue pressure on adolescent hockey players. So you're talking about 15, 16-year-old players. But the reality is, Drew, you have players at 17 that are going to play professional hockey, and that's more common in Europe, sure. Obviously. Well, you can't do it in North America. Huh. But you're talking about Patrick Laine did it.
Yeah.
Austin Matthews did it.
Right.
I mean, we've seen it for years in the Finnish leagues and the Swedish leagues. If you're a 17-year-old player,
yeah.
and we saw that with Christian Vesalainen, for example.
Sure.
He played professionally in Finland. And that's something that has existed for decades in Europe. But the thing is, I mean,
is the current system broken?
That's the issue, right? If it ain't broke, don't fix it. And
right.
I don't think it is broke. But when you're talking about, you know, whether or not the draft age should be raised, I mean, that's something where you have to have all of the stakeholders involved. Hockey Canada has to be involved. The NHL has to be involved. NHLPA, the Canadian Hockey League, right? You're talking about a huge decision. If you're going to raise the draft age to 19 years old, that's something that you do with the long term in mind, right? It's not something that you do and you say, well, we're going to see how this works for the next 2 or 3 years, and then maybe we'll bump it back to 18 years old. Because the draft age has been 18 years old for how long, Drew?
All right.
Since I can remember. I don't think there's ever been a different draft age. So I agree with you. I mean, I don't really see the need for it.
Yeah.
But obviously, some of the powers that be with the NHL do believe that. But at the end of the day, it's going to come down to the owners, the Players Association,
well,
the Canadian Hockey League.
But that's the most surprising part is that Matthew Schneider, who's a muckety-muck with the NHLPA, came out in favor of it as well.
Well, that's Donald Fehr's right-hand man.
Yeah. So I just don't understand what the logic is. Like, who's sitting there and saying there's too many 18-year-olds being rushed into the league? Every 18-year-old. Remember, Mark Scheifele made the Jets out of that first training camp. And then what happened is he clearly wasn't ready to play in the NHL, so the Jets sent him back down to his junior team. They sent him back to Barrie. There aren't very many 18-year-olds who are being, you know, ruined because of the way they're being handled by their professional team when they're 18. I would say more often than not, teams err on the side of caution. So I just don't understand why the need or what the impetus is in restricting these players from being able to turn professional or, you know, get their careers underway. This to me is so bizarre, and I'm not sure even how it ties into the Declaration of Principles.
I don't know really how it does either. You know, we should mention as well, Drew, this idea is not something new.
Yeah.
And in fact, 5 or 6 years ago, Bob Nicholson, who was then the president of Hockey Canada.
Sure, now with the Oilers organization.
Now with the Oilers organization, he proposed raising the entry draft age from 18 to 19. But again, you know, there are selfish motives involved there, because then you have more players to choose from for the World Junior Hockey Championships, for example. Because if you're an 18-year-old, you can't be drafted, so you could play. So, for example, Connor McDavid a few years back, he wouldn't have been drafted, so he would have been able to play for Team Canada at the World Junior. So you can see why in the Canadian Hockey League, so whether that's the OHL, the QMJHL, or the WHL, they would love to have these players not drafted until 19 years of age. But as far as, you know, the pressure being on 18 or 19-year-olds, well, I mean, that's something that I don't agree with.
And that's the problem right now, is that everybody that's in favor of this, they're screwing these players and their chances of making a living playing professional hockey. You know, and I think what they're going to do, these players are just going to say, you know, screw it, I'm going to go to Europe. I'm going to go do what Austin Matthews did. I'll get a big contract to play overseas in Switzerland, and I'll make some amount of money. I'm not just going to necessarily sit back, relax, and let myself be exploited by junior teams or whatever else for another year.
By the way, Drew, I don't see this happening anytime soon. I'm not saying that it's not going to happen at some point, but I don't see this happening, you know, in the next 2 to 4 years.
Well, I hope you're right. But to me, the whole idea of raising the draft age to 19 stinks. And I think that it should be getting more attention than that just being sort of pushed through on these players who don't currently have anyone standing up for them, because they're not currently members of the NHLPA and they don't have a voice, you know, in at that age just yet.
You know, just quickly here, Drew, I realize we got to go to break.
Yeah.
But one thing that could be part of this is you could have an exceptional player rule. So
yeah.
Even though they raised the draft age to 19 years old, you could still have that exceptional player rule where maybe each team is allowed to select one 18-year-old player. I'm just saying that could be part of it.
Yeah, then the whole idea seems half-baked at best, but we'll see how it plays out over the next, you know, little while. I don't think it's the last we've heard of it, that's for sure.
It's a great movie.
What's that?
Half-Baked.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Watch it all the time.
No surprise there whatsoever. When we come back, we look at some rule changes introduced for this upcoming season and discuss George Parros as the new head of the NHL Player Safety Department. Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show is up next. You're listening to TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Penalty for the wrong call. You appeal on the offside. It wasn't an offside. The goal stands. You get a 2-minute penalty. Agree or disagree?
Oh, I agree.
It's good because it embraces the spirit of the rule. The spirit of the rule is to get rid of that crazy 10-foot offside. Matt Duchene, it's kind of embarrassing that we missed it. So if it's that obvious, then you call it and it's no problem. But these little ones that take all the flow and energy out of a building and a crowd off a goal, while you wait 2, 3, 4, 5 minutes while they figure it out, if it's that close and you're not sure, then I'm all for it. Give them a penalty. Make sure if it's an obvious one, they correct it. That's what we want to do. If it's that close, that's going to take multiple minutes or you're not sure, then let's move on. I love it. Two-minute penalty is fantastic. And so you better make sure that your video guy is on point because you don't want to give up a goal and then go right back shorthanded after the fact.
That's courtesy the guys at TSN. That's Hockey, one of the rule changes announced by the NHL for the upcoming 2017-18 NHL season. Welcome back to hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mindell. The man on my left is Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. This segment brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be and Ezzy, always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. For more information or to make your teeth ting like they do with Ezzy's, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. Your teeth ting, Ez.
Yep.
Yeah, you big shiny pearls during those wedding photos from what I saw. So, you know, big shout out to Linden Market Dental Center for having you look your best on the big day of the wedding that was a couple weeks ago.
Three, actually.
3 weeks ago. There you go.
That's what happens when you miss a week.
I missed a week. My duty called with regard to my child. What can I tell you? Let's go through some of the rule changes. So the first one we heard about there is if a coach now challenges a goal, as in the Winnipeg Jets score and their opponents say, no, I think that's offside, I'm going to challenge it, and that challenge is proven to be incorrect, that team will now be given a 2-minute penalty, and the Jets or any other team that has just scored will get an opportunity to double up by immediately going on another power play.
Yeah, as opposed to a timeout, which it was before, right?
That's right, where you would lose your timeout. To me,
love the rule change.
Love this rule change.
Yeah, I
would still get rid of the video review, but I love this rule change anyways.
Right, because
Or the video review on the offside, I mean.
Right, and I think what you're going to see now is you're going to see coaches be more strategic with their challenges, right? And they had to be strategic in the first place because even losing a timeout is significant as well. Especially, Drew, if you're in the first period, right? Especially early in the game and you decide to challenge,
yeah,
you better make sure that you're right because then what happens if you need that timeout later in the game? But a timeout, though...
Timeout is 30 seconds.
Let's sure. See. Yeah, but I'm just saying, I mean, especially like later on in the game, if your guys are stuck out there after an icy, and I'm just saying, I mean, there was a penalty before, but it wasn't a 2-minute penalty. You're right. So, I mean, that's a good way to look at it. You're going from a 30-second penalty to a 2-minute penalty. So, especially late in games, if you're going to use your challenge and you're down in a game or you're trying to hang on to the lead and then you're going to put yourself down a man, I mean, that's significant. So, I like that. I mean, I hate the offside challenge, Drew. We talked about this years ago. I've always hated that offside challenge. I think you should put it back in the hands of the linesman.
A pure judgment call. Because 99% of the time, you know, to the human eye, they get it right. It's only these ridiculous ones where, is the skate a half of a millimeter above the ice surface? And they don't know. So they really are still guessing.
Right. And when you talk about goaltender interference, which is going to stay the same, which I think is the right call, you're still only going to be charged a timeout if you're wrong on the challenge.
That's
but when you're talking about goalie interference and offsides, there is a gray area for both. I think the gray area for goalie interference is bigger because I think it's tougher to determine whether or not the player did in fact obstruct the goalie's ability to stop the puck. But when you're talking about the offsides, as you mentioned, we've seen that here in Winnipeg over the last couple of years. You know, the skate was, I think it was Blake Wheeler, if I'm not mistaken, in one of the games, his skate was, you know, it was hard to determine if it was on the ice or it was just off of the ice. But the reality is, I think what they're trying to do here, in a way, is reduce the amount of challenges.
They're trying to, yeah, they're trying to make the coaches challenge only the most blatant ones. That's what they're trying to do. But, I mean, without the horse is a little bit out of the barn already, and they're trying to bring it back a little bit. They're not trying to bring it back all the way, which is what I would prefer, because human fallibility has always been a factor when it comes to hockey. It's always been a factor when it comes to sports. But this is at least a step in the right direction. It's what like the CFL did. The CFL in the midseason was being, you know, everybody hated those, what they call fishing for pass interference calls or fishing for illegal contact calls. The CFL made the rule change and said, look, you better be damn sure, because there's you're only allowed one of them per game. And if you're going to waste it on a ticky-tack opportunity, you might not be able to use it then on a blatant opportunity later on in the game.
Well, Drew, you don't have to go back any further than last year's Stanley Cup playoffs, right? The incident between Corey Perry and, Ryan Kesler and Cam Talbot. Remember when Ryan Kesler had Cam Talbot's, was obstructing his glove and was holding it down? And it looked like originally that, you know, it wasn't goalie interference, but if you slowed it down, and then after that, you know, there were a lot of videos on Twitter that emerged that really showed that Ryan Kesler was, in fact, holding Cam Talbot's arm down. Mm-hmm. I mean, so you're not always going to get it right. But here, when you're talking about this rule change, it goes back to what we were saying earlier. I think what you're trying to do is just make coaches think a little bit more before they use their challenge. And if they do end up being wrong, you're going to be penalized now, just like you would for a tripping penalty or a high sticking penalty, as opposed to just losing your timeout.
It just can't be a fishing expedition any longer. Second rule change is that, and you had mentioned this talking about timeouts, teams that ice the puck are no longer able to call timeout to get a break for their tired forwards, their tired defensemen. You can no longer call a timeout as the defensive team who has iced the puck.
Yeah, I don't know if I like that, because
I do.
That timeout is used quite often by teams.
But icing the puck should be penal. It shouldn't be a 2-minute penalty.
Well, it is. It's a face off in your zone.
Yeah, but you shouldn't be able to then get a break. If your guys are tired and if your guys are gassed, they should have to continue to be winded over the course, you know, in that instance,
yeah,
to my estimation.
Isn't the whole reason of having a timeout to use it in situations like that?
I would think a timeout is...
You know what I mean, right?
I know what you mean. Yeah. I mean, I think that the point of the timeout was more strategic. Let's set up a play. Set up a, you know, there's a minute to go in the game. We're down by a goal. Let's draw something on the whiteboard. Not, we've been hemmed into our own zone. We haven't had a line change in 2 minutes. Let's desperately ice the puck and then hope that we get a break by using our timeout.
Yeah, no, it's fair enough. I just think that there was a reason why this rule hasn't existed to this point, right? And the NHL and the NHLPA, the Department of the Competition Committee, should say, they look at everything like that. And obviously they've determined, as you said, that too many teams are using that as a time to rest. But that's, again, what I think the definition of a timeout is. It's not only to draw up a play, but it's to give your players a rest, especially when you only have one timeout. It's not like the NBA, right? The NBA, how many timeouts do they get? 15 or something?
I think they get like 8 per half or something.
Yeah,
it's not
like the NBA. So I think if you're going to do that, then maybe increase the amount of timeouts the teams get. The
difference is that NBA has, you know, only 6 guys or 5 guys on the court at a time.
Sure.
The NHL, you have line changes and everything else. So, that's why you need that many timeouts in the NBA, is I think it's more of a function of roster size and number of players on the court at a time.
All I'm saying is I don't love that rule. I like the first rule, and I imagine there are a lot of coaches that aren't going to like that rule.
The second rule.
Yeah.
Yeah. I you know what this is?
I don't think they're going to like the first one either.
Yeah, well, the coaches never like anything. I think this is the slippery slope. I think what's next after this second rule change, that teams are no longer able to call timeout after icing the puck, is that teams will no longer be able to ice the puck well shorthanded. I think this is an impetus to introduce that one as the next step, is that if you're shorthanded, you can no longer just dump the puck out of your zone to relieve the pressure.
I don't know if they bring that one in. That's something that's been talked about a lot as far as increasing scoring.
Well, they're doing everything in their power to increase scoring. They're desperate to do it.
Yeah, so, but scoring was up last year.
Third rule change, and this one I can take it or leave it. So a team now that's, if you're on the power play and you play the puck after a high stick, the ensuing faceoff went all the way back into your own zone. Now it's just going to go into the neutral zone close to the defending team's blue line.
I don't think that does much.
I don't think it does a ton either, but I think that if you play the puck with a high stick and you're on the power play, the faceoff should be back in your own zone. You've screwed up. Somewhere along the way, you've screwed up.
Well, again, yeah, I had no problem with the existing rule as well, Drew. So for me, I mean, now that the faceoff is going to go to the neutral zone on a power play as opposed to your own zone,
yeah.
I mean, it's better now for the defending team, obviously.
Yeah.
Right? But again, I don't see the need for that rule change.
Yeah, I don't think it's a big issue either. I agree with you there. That was one I'm not sure why that got to the priority where they felt the need to change that. Quickly, as George Parros, you know, he's introduced as the new head of the Department of Player Safety. Your thoughts on that hire? I mean, I know that, you know, some of the people who don't like fighting and think it's an abomination are upset about it. George Parros, to me, is a Princeton-educated hockey player who, sure, he made a living primarily with his fists, but I don't think anybody's ever accused George Parros of being a goon or being, you know, not a intelligent individual.
Yeah, even though he was in the goon Last of the Enforcers with Colton Orr. But,
right, but that's because he's an extraordinary actor.
No, I'm just joking. But, you know, when you're talking about George Parros, we know he's a bright guy. And I like the hire. And, I mean, look at who has been with the NHL Department of Player Safety over the years. Mm-hmm. Brendan Shanahan, Stefan Quintel. People forget, Stefan Quintel fought a lot when he was a member of the Winnipeg Jets and other teams. And then you're talking about a guy like Chris Pronger.
Yeah.
I don't have to remind you how many times Chris Pronger, put his stick in the back of a forward's neck when he was a member of the St. Louis Blues or Philly Flyers or Edmonton Oilers. So when you're talking about, you know, some of the guys that they've had there in the past, all of these guys played hockey on the tough side, right? Not the illegal side, but I mean, Parros is a bright guy. We know that. And, you know, I like the fact that Stefan Quintel is going to stay there and kind of transition George Parros into the role. It's not like George Parros all of a sudden is going to be on his own. And he's obviously got others there working with him. So when you're talking about this hire, I mean, he's always going to face criticism. I mean, we know that. And I imagine during this regular season, we're going to see incidents and we're going to talk about them and we're going to say that, you know, this or that player should have been suspended longer. But I do think that George Parros, based on his track record and the fact that he has been a guy who's been involved with hockey since his career ended just a couple of years ago, the proof will be in the pudding as far as whether or not it was the right hire. But again, I do think when you'd listen to Parros talk, I mean, I think he knows what challenges the NHL faces. And, you know, we'll see if the NHL starts to crack down a little bit more. Because as we've talked about here for the last 2 to 4 years, I mean, the NHL, I think, does have to be tougher on some of these headshots. And that's something they know. But again, we'll see if anything changes under his watch.
Well, here's the quote from Parros. I've always thought that they could have been a bit harsher on certain plays that I felt were clearly someone intended to do something that was away from the play, had nothing to do with the game, and no benefit other than to disable or hurt a person. Just trying to go a little bit harder on those because I feel it's been soft in some instances. Also, he's going to put an emphasis on slashing, saying that there's too many slashing infractions. We saw last year what happened when Crosby slashed off, Mark Mathot. He slashed off his finger. So looks like
Johnny Gaudreau as well.
Johnny Gaudreau, of course. Yeah, it looks like they're going to look at the what they call the tap, where you would tap a guy on the gloves as maybe an area of emphasis that George Parros is looking to.
And Drew, whatever you want to call it, I mean, they should be harder on slashing. I mean, you don't need to call it tapping. I mean, if you slash a guy hard enough, you should be suspended, right? I mean, if you're talking about breaking a guy's finger or, you know, God forbid, you know, someone's hand gets broken, you should get suspended for that. So there's no need to. I know you're just repeating what, you know, everyone started calling it. It became a buzzword this year.
Mm-hmm.
But tapping is slashing, right?
Yeah, well, absolutely it is. I mean, it's not a over your head two handed whack, but you're using a big piece of wood that, you know, a composite stick, and you're doing damage on a player's hands.
They got to be harder on that.
I would agree with you there. When we come back, we discuss the Matt Duchene situation. Is he going to show up for Avalanche training camp, or is he sick and tired of the trade rumors and the way in which Joe Sakic, Colorado Avalanche general manager, has handled his situation. That's up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Well, it's a warning signal, right, that perhaps Matt Duchene is not going to arrive and be around for training camp when it opens. Now, he's under contract to the Colorado Avalanche, so he is expected to be there. There's been a lot of rumors about the possible trade. He's been on the record as saying, hey, I don't really feel like I'm part of the Avalanche right now. I think he would love to have a fresh start somewhere else.
Can you believe we're still talking about this? I mean, this has become the...
No, I can't.
This has become the Arizona Coyotes, will they or won't they move out of the desert situation.
I don't know if it's become that bad.
It's become pretty bad. I mean, the fact that Matt Duchene is still a member of the Colorado Avalanche, Joe Sakic was a fantastic hockey player. Fantastic hockey player.
Hall of Famer. One of the greatest of all time.
He's
Burnaby proving- Joe.
He's proving himself to be fairly incompetent as a general manager.
Well, I wouldn't go that far, Drew. But
you know, I like to engage in the hyperbole. But the fact that that Matt Duchene is now considering not showing up for Colorado Avalanche training camp because he is so perturbed at how the Avs have handled this situation speaks to just how poorly this relationship and how poisonous the relationship is between Matt Duchene and the Avalanche front office.
Yeah, and Matt Duchene and the rest of the team. I mean, what does this say to the rest of your team when you're saying that you might refuse to come to training camp, right? I agree with you, Drew. I mean, look, we thought that Matt Duchene was going to be traded prior to the trade deadline this year, mm-hmm. or I should say last year.
I think it was about 5 years ago,
And then we thought he was going to be traded at the draft, and then we thought he would be traded in July. Then now here we are in early September, and he's still a member of the Colorado Avalanche for now. I mean, I think he's going to be traded at some point here, and it might be next week. I don't know, but I mean, this situation has to get resolved, Drew, because this Colorado Avalanche team is not a very good team.
That's putting it mildly.
I don't think anybody expects them to make the playoffs this year.
I would expect them to... I'd be surprised if they finished above 29th in the NHL.
Sure. And they were awful last year. They were a 48-point team last year, which was embarrassing. I mean, this Colorado Avalanche team has won two Stanley Cups.
The franchise has won two Stanley Cups. These guys haven't won any.
Well, I'm saying, I mean, in 96 and 2001, they won the Stanley Cup. Yeah. And so this is a team that has a history of success. And the last 4 or 5 years have been a joke, really. Yeah. And when you talk about Matt Duchene, I mean, Matt Duchene is a guy that I think a lot of GMs in the NHL would love to have on their team. But I think what has happened, and Pierre LeBrun and Darren Dreger and Bob McKenzie have all reported on this. I mean, Joe Sakic's asking price has obviously been too high, or he would have been traded by now. And we've heard teams like the Nashville Predators being rumored to maybe acquire Matt Duchene. I don't know if that's going to happen now that Ryan Ellis is injured, because Ryan Ellis was one of those players that was rumored to be going to Colorado. Sure. By the way, I don't think David Poile has any interest in moving Ryan Ellis at all.
Why would you touch the best defense in the NHL?
And that's if he's healthy, by the way. Not because he's injured. I think when Ellis...
Even when he was healthy.
No, Ellis is a guy that I think Poile would love to have for the rest of his career. He's a great defenseman. But needless to say, Drew, I mean, they have to find the right fit as far as a training partner goes, right? So I think there are a handful of teams. I don't know how many teams exactly. Maybe three or four, maybe half a dozen. I don't know, who are seriously injured interested in Duchene, because some teams just won't be able to fit him in under their salary cap, right?
Sure.
So if you're the Detroit Red Wings, for example, you just can't afford to get a Matt Duchene. You obviously don't have the players to trade for Matt Duchene, but back to, this whole business of Matt Duchene possibly, sitting out training camp. I mean, if you have a player that's saying that through his agent now, I mean, you have to move him, don't you?
I can't believe you can start training camp or start the season with him literally holding out. When was the last time, and I asked Stephen Wino about this, last hour, when was the last time a player with a valid contract? So what Jacob Trouba did last year was not hold out. Jacob Trouba just did not come to terms on an agreement with the Winnipeg Jets. There's a big difference. Matt Duchene has a valid contract, and Alexei Yashin, is he the last guy who had a valid contract that chose not to play? I think so.
It hasn't happened in recent memory, Drew. And, you know, when you're talking about trading Matt Duchene, I think if you're Joe Sakic almost at this point, you have to not only, you know, bring your demands down, but you have to make a move however that is. So, I mean, even if it's, you know, at this point, you know, just getting a couple of prospects, I realize that he wants a defenseman and also wants a high draft pick, so most likely a first-round draft pick. But at this point, he's become such a negative influence on this team. It's created such negative energy around this team that I think you have to move him however you can, right? So, I mean, I'm not saying that you're going to give him away for a seventh-round draft pick. I'm just saying that you might not be getting a top-four defenseman and a first-round draft pick like you wanted before.
The offers are the offers. They're not going to improve at this point in time. I don't think that anybody's going to all of a sudden, you know, cave into whatever demands Joe Sakic is making. And the problem is that the way it's been handled is you almost can't bring Matt Duchene back at this point in time because you've poisoned the water so much. The water, you know, underneath the bridge has been burned and the water is all toxic and everything else. It's just a bad situation. And then you have Joe Sakic, who's almost paralyzed by indecision in this instance.
Like, for example, Drew, another team, in addition to the Predators, who apparently was after Duchene, was the New York Islanders.
Sure.
Right? The Islanders.
Pair him up with John Tavares.
There you go. And so, if you're Joe Sakic, if the Islanders are offering you a couple of prospects and a second-round pick, do you take it?
If they had offered you Travis Hamonic, who ended up going to Calgary, you know, if they're offering you Travis Hamonic and somebody, you know, you telling me Travis Hamonic wouldn't look great on the Colorado Avalanche? I mean, he's a human body, would look good on the Colorado Avalanche defense.
I think you have to get rid of Duchene before the season starts. And if you have to do that for, even if it's a couple of forward prospects and a second round pick or a first round pick, whatever it is, whatever Joe Sakic was after before, he's not getting. And, you know, teams, unfortunately, don't trade their top four defensemen. That just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
David Poile doesn't want to trade Ryan Ellis. He doesn't want to trade Matthias Ekholm.
And he doesn't. Yeah, exactly. And why would he?
He has the best defense in the league. And would Matt Duchene look good in a Predators uniform? Probably. But he doesn't want to do it at the expense of his defense. So if you're Joe Sakic, you're probably looking at long-term prospects. Like a guy like Mitch Van de Sample was a guy who was rumored to maybe be part of a package from the Islanders Avalanche.
You made up that name. That's not a real person.
No, he played in the Ontario Hockey League. So, you're talking about prospects like that.
Yeah.
And I realize Matt Duchene is still in his mid-20s. He's still a guy that I think can pop in 30 Gs.
I think Matt Duchene goes to any other situation besides the Colorado Avalanche, and he's going to be the Matt Duchene of Team Canada.
And the point I was trying to make there, Drew, is I think Joe Sakic realizes that, and he realizes he's losing, you know, one of his top forwards, so he wants to get something back. But unfortunately, that's past.
Yeah.
He had better offers on the table that he didn't accept, so now he's in a position, he's between a rock and a hard place. You know, he basically just has to get whatever he can for Matt Duchene at this point.
He screwed up the situation. That's basically what it boils down to, and when you screw it up, all of a sudden, no one's going to throw you a lifeline. That's not the way the world works. Previous segment was brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. If you're looking for something to do tonight, maybe right after the Banjo Bowl, Andy Hendrickson at Rumors tonight, his final night in town. He's been absolutely killing it all week. He's here all the way from Los Angeles. Two shows tonight, 7:15 and 10 p.m. Tickets available, RumorsComedyClub.com. When we come back, we talk more about the Avalanche and their offseason. Rick Sadowski, Avalanche correspondent for NHL.com, joins us next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number three, you're listening to TSN 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us in studio via text message. Send your messages to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And our website, it's got the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio. That's available at illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to be joined by Rick Sadowski. Rick is the Avalanche, the Colorado Avalanche correspondent for NHL.com. Rick, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
Morning. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, Rick. We spent last segment, Rick, and we're going to talk about the Avalanche, and we're going to talk about their offseason, and we're going to talk about their prospects for the 2017-18 season during this interview. But we spent last segment talking about Matt Duchene and the possibility that he may not report to training camp when it begins next week, as his agent was certainly non-committal when asked that question earlier this week. Obviously, he's got a valid NHL contract, so he wouldn't be what I would call, justified in not reporting. But from Matt Duchene's perspective, can you understand the frustration that might have driven him to this point where he might, say, I'm not going to honor my valid contract because I'm so frustrated with how this trade situation has been handled?
I don't think there's any question about that. I mean, I've always been a big Matt Duchene supporter. He's really a good player, obviously. Whether he's a great player or not, I don't know. He's always been someone that I've enjoyed talking to. I think he's very honest. He can be very sensitive. I'm not saying that in a bad way. So I think in one sense, he's kind of been left a twist in the wind, and he's been the face of the franchise, for a long time. So I can understand his frustration. I mean, he's a guy who grew up basically rooting for this franchise. I mean, he had Joe Sakic and Patrick Waugh posters on his wall. How he feels about the organization as we speak, I don't know. I just remember talking to him late last season, and I don't know that he wanted to be traded, but the impression I got from talking to him was that he really thought he was going to be traded. And now it's several months later. We got, 5 days before the Vets are supposed to report to training camp, and nothing's happened. So it's the elephant in the room, as they say, and I don't know if anyone really knows what's going to happen between now and Thursday or if he's going to report.
Rick, up until this point, do you think that Joe Sakic has asked for too much in return for Matt Duchene?
Well, I know he wants a top four defenseman and either a high draft pick and or a prospect. Obviously, he hasn't gotten that in return, so I have to think maybe he is asking too much. And now, with 5 days before training camp, I can't see him lowering his asking price just out of desperation. I mean, Matt Duchene is still a good player. He is under contract. And on the other hand, if other teams haven't been willing to give him what he wants, for the past 6 months or whatever it's been, I can't see them all of a sudden saying, okay, yeah, you can have, so-and-so in the draft pick and all that stuff. So it's really a messy situation.
Rick Sadowski is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're discussing the Colorado Avalanche as they enter the 2017-18 NHL season. Rick, we know the weakness on this team has been and continues to be the defense. You look at this defense entering the season, and it's hard to overstate that. I think the word that I would use is overmatched. They just don't have the necessary or the requisite NHL talent to be competitive in this day and age. How do you see the Avalanche defense at the start of the season?
Well, it's one of the reasons why Joe Sakic wants to get another defenseman in here, or at least another defenseman. They're thin as we speak. They basically have three returning regulars on defense, Mark Barberio, Tyson Barrie, and Eric Johnson. Nikita Zadorov, who people tend to forget about a little bit, is a restricted free agent, and they still haven't signed him. They apparently have agreed to a two-year contract, but money's the problem. But even if he signs, that leaves him with four guys. This is going to be a very young defense, no matter what happens with Duchesne, whether if they get another defenseman in here. It's been a problem for a number of years, and it could get worse this year.
Rick, you wrote about this earlier this week, Semyon Varlamov and his health, and it looks like he's going to be ready for the start of training camp after he had a lot of groin problems last year. How important is a healthy Semyon Varlamov going to be for this team, especially now that Calvin Pickard is a member of the Vegas Golden Knights organization? And not only Varlamov's health, but how important is it that he gets back to the level that he was at 3 years ago?
He may be the most important player on this team right now. As we've just talked about, you know, the defense being a weak link, I think he may have to play as well, if not better, if that's possible, than he did 3 years ago when he was a Vezina Trophy finalist. I mean, he's really the reason, you know, they won 50-something games 3 years ago and made the playoffs for the first time in 4 years. No, he's got to be back at that level. It's hard to say, you know, what he looks like during veteran practices, which they've had this week. But he looked good. He's a very athletic goalie. He's the kind of guy who's got to be able to move around a lot in his crease. He certainly looked like that this week. He says he's very healthy, says he feels good. To me, he's the most significant factor on this team as to whether they have any chance of being competitive.
Rick Sadowski, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Rick covers the Colorado Avalanche for NHL.com. Rick, the Avs weren't especially busy in the offseason, but one acquisition that they did make was getting Colin Wilson from division rival Nashville. What role do the Avalanche and Jared Bednar, head coach Jared Bednar, expect to see Colin Wilson play in this upcoming season?
Well, if he can, you know, return to the level he was a couple years ago when he scored 20 goals, I'm assuming he's going to be a second or third line guy, whether he plays center or whether he plays on the wing. Not really sure about that, but he's a very good two-way player. He can bring some veteran leadership to this team, and he's coming off a team that went to the Stanley Cup final. So maybe some of that can rub off on. You know, one of the other guys that they did get was Yakupov, who obviously was a first-round pick several years ago and hasn't played up to that level. He had a really good rookie year. To me, it's a win-win situation. Bringing a guy in who certainly has a lot of skill. It's a one-year deal, not making a lot of money. So it's a very low-risk gamble. I think that's something that could help them also.
Rick, the Colorado Avalanche are in San Jose this weekend for the rookie tournament. Is it safe to say that Tyson Jost is going to be the player that most Colorado Avalanche fans are going to have their eyes on?
No question about it. And there's no question that he's going to be on the opening night roster. He won't assume anything because that's just the kind of guy that he is. But he was terrific in college. Only played six games last year after he signed. But he looked really bigger and stronger. He's almost like a Joe Sakic type player. I mean, I don't want to put that much pressure on him. He's still only 19 years old, but I think in the future he's going to be a really good player. I mean, this team needs to get younger and faster, and he's definitely one of those players that fits that bill.
Rick Sadowski, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Rick covers the Colorado Avalanche for NHL.com. Rick, you know, in all the talk about Matt Duchesne and his status on the team, there's not nearly as much talk about Nathan MacKinnon and Gabriel Landeskog. And of course, you know, MacKinnon, Duchesne, and Landeskog, the three of them were supposed to be the core of this Colorado Avalanche team. All this losing, what sort of impact do you think it's having on Nathan MacKinnon? What sort of impact do you think it's having on Gabriel Landeskog? These are two guys who are not yet even 25 years of age. Nathan McKinnon's only 22. It seems like he's been around for so long, but of course he broke in at 18. So all this losing, what impact is it having on Landeskog and MacKinnon to your mind?
Well, it wears on them after a while, but I think they're both pretty mentally strong. I don't really think it's going to affect their play. I mean, they still work hard. Obviously, they want to win. They are two of the guys that have to play better this year than they did last year. I mean, I don't know that anybody on this team played particularly well last year other than Mikko Rantanen, who's 21-year-old rookie last year who scored 20 goals. But McKinnon, Landeskog, Erik Johnsson, who missed part of the season with a broken leg, these are guys, and Tyson Berry, they all had off years last year, all at the same time, which was obviously one of the significant problems with this team. But McKinnon and Landeskog have to play at a higher level than they did last season. No question about it.
Rick, final question for you here. We wanted to ask you about Alex Kerfoot, who was signed to a two-year deal back in late August, about 3 weeks ago. I guess, what are the expectations for Alex Kerfoot this year? He was a finalist for the Hobie Baker Award, and he obviously had a very successful career with Harvard.
I spoke to him yesterday because they had a rookie camp yesterday before they all left for San Jose, where they're playing a bunch of games the next several days. I don't know that he's going to make the team right out of college. And he said yesterday, obviously he wants to make the team, but if he has to go to the AHL to begin his pro career, that's fine. The reason, or one of the main reasons why he chose to sign here was after talking to Sakic and Jared Bednar, he got the impression that he would have a chance to make this team, if not this season, you know, pretty early, because they want to get younger and they want to get faster. And obviously the opportunity is there because the team was so awful last year. So whether he makes the team or not this season, he's definitely a guy that they'll be looking at in the future. And he's he's a Harvard guy, so he's a pretty smart guy too. So he knows the score.
Rick Sadowski covers the Colorado Avalanche for NHL.com. Rick, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
Okay, have a great weekend.
Likewise, Rick. Thanks again. When we come back, one final segment. It's called NHL News and Notes. We look around the NHL to see what's been happening with your favorite team. One more segment to go. Saturday morning, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Restricted free agent Bo Horvat has signed a six-year contract with the Canucks worth $33 million. It carries a $5.5 million annual cap hit. Horvat led Vancouver with 52 points last season, something only the Sedin Twins had done since 2006. Horvat becomes the club's fourth highest-paid player behind the Sedins and Louis Erickson.
A very nice payday for RFA, or then RFA, Bo Horvat. He gets $5.5 million a year after his breakout season last year. Of course, a former top 10 selection, ninth overall back in 2013. He's had 52 points, 20 goals, his first 20 goal campaign in the NHL. He gets paid $5.5 million per season. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio for one final segment on this Saturday morning. And it's brought to you by our good friends at Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Perhaps you're looking for a spot to watch this afternoon's Banjo Bowl. Maybe you didn't get tickets to the game. Bernstein's Deli is going to have the game on their big screen TVs. Settle in. Get yourself an Illegal Curve sandwich, maybe a cold beer or something like that. Watch the Bombers hopefully kick the living tar out of our neighbors to the west in what should be a epic Banjo Bowl, a rematch of last weekend's game. Hopefully none of the Rough Riders tear any hamstrings jogging off the field in between plays or anything like that. You'd hate to see that happen after last week's shenanigans, I'd say.
Yeah, and Darren, Westy, and Walby are going to be in here right after we're off air with your Blue Bomber game day coverage. And congrats also to Bernstein's Deli. They sold out for the third consecutive year of their burgers the day before Burger Week ended. Yeah. I believe they sold 1,000 of their burgers. There was a limited run because
1,200, if I'm not mistaken. They actually went back. They ordered a cow.
Yeah,
is what they did, to make up, for their burgers because they were all
natural.
Well,
Drew, you're not living unless you own a cow.
Naturally. That's just basically my policy in life is you have to own a cow. And it was so popular that they had to go back to their supplier.
And they had to buy another cow.
They actually bought another quarter of a cow because that's all that the supplier was able to buy for them.
So I like to buy a whole cow.
I understand.
I'm not interested in a quarter cow, cow.
You need a whole cow. Yeah. I understand. Anyways, Bernstein's a fantastic Burger Week. Thank you to everybody who supported Bernstein's Deli and their fantastic Burger Week burger.
You and Rory missed out last week.
You know what?
Because Shawnee and I were gorging on burgers. It was great.
I was a little upset about that I missed out on when they came in studio for the taste test, as they do each and every year as part of Burger Week. So that was a little disappointing, I have to admit, but I'm thrilled for our good friends at Bernstein's Deli. They had such a successful Burger Week, and of course, the Legal Curve sandwich. You can order it. It's back on the menu. Hockey season's begun. Watch the Banjo Bowl there later on this afternoon.
Yep, I'm going. I got my tickets. Yeah. It's my first game of the season. I'm really pumped up. Unfortunately, with the wedding and all of that, I didn't get an opportunity
It's really inconvenient of Naomi to saddle you with wedding responsibilities and interfere with your bomber watching.
Well, I actually asked Wade Miller if he could start the season this year in September, but he said, that's not possible. It should be a great game. Obviously, the Bombers lost the Labor Day Classic, losing their first game in six games, but
good opportunity to bounce back in front of a capacity crowd.
I think they're going to win tonight.
Yeah, good opportunity to bounce
today,
back
I should say.
In front of a capacity crowd at IG Field coming up 2 hours and 10 minutes from now. And as you mentioned, Blue Bomber game day after us, Walby Westwood bombing. They have you covered for pre-game, halftime, and post-game. One other quick shout-out. Goldeyes, game three of their semifinal series. They're in action tonight at Shaw Park. Goldeyes split the series in Lincoln. Yep. They want to sweep it at home, win in four games. So if you're looking for something to do tonight as well, the Goldeyes in action. We want to give a shout-out to the Goldeyes ahead of their game this evening. Back to Bo Horvat.
Yeah,
he gets the $5.5 million per season for the next 6 years. Coming off of a 20-goal season, 52 points. Reasonable contract?
Yeah, I think it's a reasonable contract, Drew. He's right in that $5.5 million range. Maybe you say he got overpaid a little bit, but when you're the Vancouver Canucks, I mean, I think Bo Horvat, you're looking at a future captain of the team. I really do. And when you're talking about the Sedins, they're in the last year of their contracts, and we know that the Sedins, are towards the tail end of their careers, right? Mm-hmm. This might be their last year in the NHL. Certainly, it's going to be one of their last years in the NHL. So when you're talking about Bo Horvat, you're talking about one of the guys that is now transitioning from not only a young prospect in this organization, but he's one of their best players. Mm-hmm. I would argue that he is their best player now. So, I mean, we knew that they were going to lock him up long term. And, when you're talking about some of the young prospects in their system right now, Brock Besser, who played for University of North Dakota, he's now playing for Vancouver in the rookie tournament in Penticton, but he's going to play for the Canucks this year. You're talking about guys like Jake Virtanen. Thatcher Demko is a guy who obviously they see down the road being a future number one goaltender for them, but when you're talking about this Canucks team, I just don't see how they've improved enough to get into the playoffs. So even though they went out and they acquired a guy like Michael Delzato or Sam Gagne or Thomas Vanek, I just don't know if those players are going to do enough to get them into the playoffs, because when you're talking about the top teams in the Pacific Division, you're talking about the Anaheim Ducks, mm-hmm. you're talking about the San Jose Sharks, and you're talking about the Edmonton Oilers. I would throw the Flames in there. They
retooled
Flames have this year.
One of the best defenses in the
league. Yeah, I just and most likely it's going to be four teams that get in from the Pacific, I would imagine. I mean, at the very least, obviously it's going to be three, but I just see the Canucks not being good enough to get into the playoffs. But this is a signing for the long term. Bo Horvat is a guy, as you mentioned, had a career year last year, hit that 20-goal mark. And I think the sky's the limit. I think you're looking at a guy that has 30-goal upside and, a guy that plays the game. I like the way he plays the game. He plays a rugged game, and he's not the biggest guy, but he's a guy that throws his weight around. He's 220-plus pounds. He's not afraid to mix it up. So a good all-around player. So I really like that signing.
Yeah, moving on to Nashville, where they suffered a serious injury. Ryan Ellis is going to miss the next several months, certainly the start of the season, and then a few additional months as that, as he continues to recover from off-season surgery. Everybody talks about the Predators, their defense, certainly the strength of that team. Ryan Ellis doesn't get the headlines. He's sort of, you know, a little under the radar. Headlines go to PK Subban. They go to Seth Jones. They go to, you know, Roman Josi. But Ryan Ellis is a key cog on what most people would say is the best defense in the NHL.
Seth Jones was traded, Drew, but
Seth Jones is
Matthias Ekholm is still there.
Sorry, that was a brain fart right there.
It's all good. Yeah. When you're talking about Ryan Ellis, though, I mean, I thought even you talk about career years. Seth Bo Jones. Horvat is coming off of a career year. Ryan Ellis is coming off of a career year. But I thought he was really good in the playoffs. He was even better in the playoffs. He continued his strong play from the regular season and was a top defenseman playing 20-plus minutes a night for the Nashville Predators. So when you're talking about Ryan Ellis, I mean, they're going to miss him, but the Nashville Predators are so strong on defense. And you mentioned Roman Josi, PK Subban, Matthias Ekholm. This is a very strong team. So I don't think not having Ryan Ellis there for the first 3 months of the season is going to mean they're going to miss the playoffs, but they'll definitely miss him.
Oh, absolutely. That's going to be, yeah, I think that they'll be able to recover. I don't think it'll cost them a playoff spot. I think they're deep, really, everywhere else. But that absence of Ryan Ellis, they'll feel that. But, to be able to fill him in with a guy like Alexei Yemelin, that's a nice sort of cushion to have. It's not like they're bringing in some stiff off the street.
Right, and, you know, that was a very astute move by David Poile, Drew. You mentioned Alexei Yemelin. He's a guy that obviously is not a player who's known for his offense. I mean, no. He's a defensive defenseman who is known for throwing his weight around. He's a very physical defenseman. If you look at the hits leaders in the NHL, Alexei Yemelin is always up there as far as leading the league in hits. Mm-hmm. So a guy like Yemelin is definitely going to factor in to the defense. You know, most likely you want him being a third pairing guy, whereas Ryan Ellis is a second pairing defenseman. But you're right. I mean, they do have depth there. Yannick Weber is another guy that I think was very underrated last year, being on the third pair for the Nashville Predators. So they'll be fine.
Quickly to Calgary, where they signed Sam Bennett, a former fourth overall pick, to a two-year, $3.9 million deal. He gets $1.95 million per season. This is a guy who's still looking to really establish himself in the NHL. Best season was a couple years ago where he had 36 points.
Yeah, I'm a little bit surprised that Sam Bennett didn't sign a longer-term deal, but you know, you mentioned, Drew, he's coming off of a poor year for the Calgary Flames. You know, for a fourth overall pick, the expectations are sky-high for Sam Bennett. I mean, this was a guy that when they drafted him, they expected him to be a 30-35-goal scorer at the NHL level. But again, he gets a bridge deal and an opportunity to prove himself and get a longer-term contract after this.
That's it for this Saturday morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Big thanks to our guest, James Gordon, Ottawa Senators beat writer. We had Paulie Edmonds, Jets broadcaster, Stephen Wino of the Associated Press, and Rick Sadowski of NHL.com. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on iTunes or via your favorite Android device. Subscribe to the show, get it sent to you each and every week. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, Keener Jerseys, and Bell Acres Golf and Country Club. Support them because they support the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. For producer Rory, doing a great job behind the board. For Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Stay tuned for Blue Bomber Game Day, coming up next on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290.
As long as you set the yard, the team will be all right.